Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'm Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida. I'd like to welcome all of you to Tuesday Topics this evening. I'd like to thank Brian Charlson and Joe from Boston, who are recording this evening, Asim Hai. And I'd like to thank whoever in ACB Radio ends up doing editing for this program. And of course, we'd like to thank Talking Communities for making this software available to us, which enables us to actually do this program. Tonight we're talking about something that virtually everyone who is a Braille user at all has familiarity with, and that's the Perkins Braille Writer. The Perkins Braille Writer is certainly the best known Braille writing device in the world. There's probably one in every single country in the world, and I would venture to say that most people who are blind in this country, and in many countries, actually have a Perkins Brailler. And yet, we don't often get an opportunity to talk about the manufacturer of Perkins Brailers, the history of Perkins Brailers, where they come from, what plans are for the future, and so on. And so it's with great pleasure this evening that I welcome to Tuesday Topics Mr. David Morgan, who is the chief executive for the Howe Press, which is the company that manufactures Perkins Brailers and has done for quite a long time. I'm sure that over the next hour or so, we'll learn lots of things about the Perkins Brailler that we didn't know. So I suppose, David, first, welcome to the program, and second, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about when the Perkins started to be made, and perhaps give us kind of an introduction to the historical background, perhaps, of the Perkins Brailler. So welcome, David.
Thank you, Paul. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you all for having me. You'll have to bear with me as well. For me at Howe Press and Perkins School for the Blind, it's only been 10 months or so. So it's been a short stint. There's an awful lot going on. I'll give you a little bit of background on the Perkins Brailler, and by all means, chime in at some point if you have some other questions. Way back in the 1940s, David Abraham, actually, who had started with the Perkins School for the Blind as a teacher in the woodworking department, was asked to start tinkering to see if he could develop a new Brailler for Perkins School for the Blind. The previous Brailler had been discontinued in the decade or so before that, and there was some reason to believe that a new Brailler could be developed that would serve the needs of the blind community. And over the next 5 years or so, David Abraham continued to develop a design for the Perkins Brailler, but World War II interrupted that process as materials became in short supply. Just after World War II and into 1951, they started up final design and initial manufacturing of the Perkins Brailler, invested considerable money. It took them about 5 years, actually, to bring it to market. And eventually they did get it to market, and since that day it came to market, they've been nearly sold out ever since.
And the other interesting thing is it would at least appear to us outwardly that for an awfully long time the Perkins Brailler didn't change its design very much. That is, once they hit upon a design that worked, it seemed to stay the same for an awfully long time. Would you agree with that, David?
It's very clear to me in my short time with Perkins and Howe Press that's exactly the case. It took so long to develop it, and David Abraham was known as such a perfectionist that once he had finally gotten the design that he wanted, no one wanted to risk making any changes to the design and fear that they would actually make it worse.
I guess the first time I noticed it was 8 or 10 years ago. There seemed to be some cosmetic changes that occurred to the Perkins Braille Writer. The end caps on either side that you use to wind the lines changed. A couple of other kind of cosmetic changes occurred. But for the most part, as you say, the design remained the same. Though at some point, Perkins did decide to market an electric Perkins Brailler. That was kind of short-lived, though, and I guess you guys are not making it anymore. Is that correct?
Actually, I'll respond to a few things you said. The Light Touch Electric Brailler is alive and well, and we now sell hundreds of them, and it's been re-released as a product. With respect to some of the other cosmetic changes, certainly in the last 10 years or so, there have been a number of small changes, either in how you hold the paper in the back of the carriage, and the plastic knobs have been made larger. For the most part, these 700 or so discrete pieces haven't changed that much since their introduction.
It's interesting when you think about it. 700 discrete pieces in a relatively small machine like a Perkins Brailer. Now, initially, one imagines that the Perkins Brailer was manufactured entirely at the Howe Press. I know that in the past couple of decades, Perkins has licensed some overseas manufacturers. Are the Perkins Brailers that are sold in the States still entirely manufactured at the Howe Press?
Up until about, no, actually for the last 6, 8, or 10 years or so, they've been assembled overseas, but all the components have been manufactured in the U.S. So effectively, up until recently, a kit of parts would go overseas for assembly. And just to give you a sense of the quality of the manufacturer, one of our assembly partners is actually ISO 9001 certified. So, and they outsource automotive machining and assembly for brake liners in India, for instance.
So most of the Perkins Brailers that are actually being sold now, a kit is assembled and then is sent overseas and is put together and then is essentially re-brought back into the States at this point?
That's exactly true until recently. Part of our more recent initiatives, I would say over the last 6 months, months or so, is to recapture everything that was great about the original manufacturing. So you would find limited assembly going on now at Howe Press at Perkins School for the Blind. You would see us re-engaged in engineering and design and implementation of quality systems and document control. We are now the technical hub for all that happens overseas. And we do also do limited assembly. So we're... Some years ago, we actually transferred much of the knowledge for Brailer assembly overseas. We've now recaptured that knowledge so that we can take the next step in manufacturing technology and cross-training and best practices and quality systems. We're really at a juncture in the history of Howe Press and the Perkins Brailer. For some 50 years, the Brailer essentially remained unchanged and was really part of a craft industry for Perkins School for the Blind. With Steve Rothstein, under Steve Rothstein's leadership over the last few years or so, Perkins School for the Blind and Howe Press is starting to reinvest in improving quality, reliability, increasing manufacturing and capacity. Sales are at the highest point probably in the last 20 years and continue to grow.
Some of us believe that the quality of Perkins Brailers over the last 10 years have not been as robust and as absolutely indestructible as they were, say, 20, 30 years ago. Was that a factor in causing you guys to retake control?
I think if we had had this discussion 2, 3, 4 years ago, I would say yes. Based on the conversations I've had with the folks overseas and the product I see assembled, I would say today that the Brailer is as good, if not better, than it's ever been. The assembly partners we have overseas have terrific quality systems, terrific support, and they take what is essentially components designed some 50 years ago and turn it into magic. They do just a terrific job. And I think if folks were buying Perkins Brailers or electric Brailers today, they would find they're probably the best they've ever seen.
Is Perkins also still manufacturing a Brailer with large dots, that is, for diabetics?
The large cell Brailer remains. There's also a large cell electric Brailer, a unimanual Brailer. Most of the products, the Perkins Brailer products that have been around are still there. I think part of the challenge for Perkins and Howe Press over the years had been in the very nature of a craft business, we accepted orders, but we didn't sell and market. So part of the emphasis now is in growing capacity and selling and marketing around the world.
Howe Press does not only do braille writers. I know you're probably one of the chief sources in the United States for slates and styluses. Are there other products that you guys manufacture aside from slates, or that you manufacture and sell aside from slates and styluses and brailers?
predominantly, we sell the Brailler slates and this, you know, there's a cross section of 6, 8, or 10 of those and the Perkins Brailler. That's starting to change, but I would say that the two primary products today are those.
Do you have plans actually afoot to consider a significant alteration in the Perkins Brailler, perhaps creating some new capacities, perhaps incorporating some computer components? But is there a crystal ball you can peek in and tell us something about what your plans are in terms of the Brailler?
As all of you that use the Perkins Brailler can appreciate, everyone has an opinion about how good the Perkins Brailler is today and what direction it should head, if in any direction, in the future. For me, this kind of ties into what represents technology for a lot of folks. If you've grown up with a Perkins Brailler and it's the foundation for, you know, lifelong learning, it has all sorts of nostalgic values that we would want to be very careful to about changing. So, for instance, if a Perkins Brailler has a certain center of gravity, a certain smell, touch, feel, tactile senses, we want to think long and hard about whether we change that fundamental built-in nostalgia about the Perkins Brailler. So the short answer is yes, we absolutely want to move forward with product extensions, new product development, lighten the Brailler, simplify its design, lower its cost while maintaining its quality and sense of durability and reliability. But the world is a-changing. For sure, overseas, where 80% of the world's blind live in developing countries, the current Perkins Brailler is immensely popular. Here in the U.S., where technology reigns, I would say those sales continue to grow. There's certainly a challenge to keep up with newer and more exciting technologies. Some might ask, does the Perkins Brailler remain cool for a child that's, you know, integrated in a public school? So I think we have an awful lot of challenges to stay current and relevant. But as a practical matter, I can tell you just from the last month, sales are up over 50%. We're in countries we've never been in before. The Brailler remains strong and relevant. And I think likely in the next 1 or 2 years, we will continue to work on product extensions that improve the current Brailler design, that simplify it, that lighten it, that make it in some cases more accessible in the developing market by dropping the cost of manufacturing. The longer term, I think we will likely need to partner with folks that represent some forms of technology, because certainly our core competencies at Howe Press have not been high-tech electronics in the past.
Those of us who are Perkins Brailler users can't quite imagine it not being cool for a kid to use a Perkins Brailler, so it sort of gives me pause anyway to think about even the possibility, because for most of us who are Perkins Brailler users, it really doesn't matter how much technology we have. There's still a use for a Perkins Brailler in most of our households. Gosh, I would guess almost on a daily basis. Let's talk for a minute about costs. I remember, and it shows how old I am, when the Perkins Brailler was about, gosh, I want to say, initially when it started out around $70 or so. The last time I looked at a Perkins Brailler, it was selling for around $750. For a lot of individuals who are blind, that makes the Perkins Brailler a pretty expensive product for them to buy. Do you realistically think you actually will, over the next few years, be able to lower the cost of that product in the United States as opposed to overseas? Because I am aware that overseas it's actually selling for somewhat less.
Those that buy direct from Howe Press pay $640 in the U.S. That price has essentially remained unchanged for, I believe, 10 to 12 years. So while the cost of manufacturing continues to go up, while salary and labor costs continue to go up, while the cost of materials continues to go up, effectively the Brailler has continued to hold that $640 price. Overseas, it is subsidized. In developing nations, as defined by the World Bank, the Perkins Brailler is priced at $375. For many of those nations, of course, $375 is still expensive. I do expect that we will be able to drop the cost of manufacturing. The challenge will be whether or not that reduction in cost is passed back to consumers in the U.S. in terms of lower prices, or do developing countries and to some degree subsidize through price reduction developed countries subsidize developing countries through a price reduction.
Clearly, the Perkins Brailler is a crucial development tool for people who are blind. Do you see any new things on the horizon with regard to the slates that you guys are working with?
We haven't taken up the slates of late. I do expect actually by this spring that we'll have a significant roundtable discussion with a number of experts in the field and HAL Press personnel to actually start talking about the slates. They too have remained unchanged for many years, and they're still a mainstay of our business. Between the Perkins Brailler slates and spare parts and service, it's a pretty thriving business. I don't expect the slates to change dramatically in the next 12 months or so, but I think from there on you might see some new developments in that area.
Service is an interesting issue. HAL Press does service Perkins Brailers and is prepared to work on repairs of Perkins Brailers from wherever they come from. Is that correct or is that not correct?
Yes, that is correct. HAL Press services brailers right there on the premises. Generally, those brailers are coming in from the U.S. and Canada. We also have a very active program, primarily now overseas, to train the trainers, to sponsor events in South America, in Europe, in Asia, India, South Africa, to train folks in Perkins Brailler repair and actually help them become certified repair specialists. To date, I believe that number is probably close to about 1,000 folks around the world that have been trained through Perkins programs to repair brailers.
There are also a number of people within the United States who aren't directly related to HAL Press. I know there's a guy in Des Moines, Iowa, and of course there is I know our state library in the state of Florida will do some Perkins Brailler repair if pushed. Is this something that HAL Press encourages as well?
Yes, absolutely. Our main focus is to help folks get brailers fixed and operational. So it's to our benefit and probably braille users around the world to have as many folks as possible. At the end of the day, they're likely to be buying those spare parts, of course, from HAL Press. But I don't see them as direct competition. A brailer repair at HAL Press remains steady, and spare parts sales continue to increase as the installed base of Perkins Brailers now reaches about 310,000 around the world.
Of course, there are some of us who've had Perkins Brailers for 50 years that are still used. Do you actually have a certification program for repairers of Perkins Brailers, and do they actually receive a certificate or some kind of a diploma that you'd have a record of at Perkins, so that if, for instance, some of our listeners were wanting to see whether a person who said they were a Brailler repairer was any good, would they be able to check with you guys to establish whether that person was certified or not?
I'm not certain how complete the records are here in the U.S. Certainly, a number of folks here in the U.S. have been certified. They've been given certificates. There has not been in the U.S. a formal certificate program where, for instance, we would provide some specific visible form of certification that everyone could look to. Overseas, it's a bit different. We actually sponsor events, particularly at our partner sites in South Africa and Cape Town and Chennai, India, and a number of other sites where we hold events, take folks through 1 or 2 weeks' worth of training, and they become certified brailler repair specialists. Those folks in those other countries would actually be found on the service portion of our website, and you would see probably some 30 or 40 locations around the world that have certified brailler repair specialists.
It would be interesting to see HAL Press consider doing some of that for the U.S. I know that many people stopped sending stuff to HAL Press because at least at the time there was a pretty lengthy turnaround time, and I think the costs for services at HAL Press were considerably higher than some of the costs that were available elsewhere. So it would really be good, I think, for some of us if you guys would consider doing something about certifying folks within the U.S. and Canada so that we'd have a better idea of who, in fact, was repairing our Perkins Brailler.
Actually, we agree with you. I think part of the challenge in the last few years or so, and I think, again, this is likely to change over the next couple of years, is the level of interest and the cost of certifying folks. If someone needs to pay $1,000 out of pocket and transportation and expenses to learn how to repair Perkins' Brailer. You can do that on occasion. And actually, at this point in time, we have scheduled events. And there's actually a scheduled event coming up. I believe it's in August. I can get the date for folks that are interested, where there'll be a two-week certification program. Long before that workshop takes place, we'll end up doing an email and perhaps a direct mail, but more likely an email campaign to all the schools for the blind and organizations that distribute products around the country to let those folks know of that event. But that's likely to take place in August, and that will be a formal certification process.
Do you know whether a blind person or blind people in general can effectively do Perkins Brailer repairs or put Perkins Brailers together from the ground up? There isn't a right answer or a wrong answer to this. I'm just curious.
I have limited direct experience. I can tell you that I've met a gentleman that we trained in Perkins Brailer repair. I wouldn't consider him an expert. He is blind. I would say he's more than capable of assembling and disassembling and oiling and cleaning and doing, I would say, 95% of Perkins Brailer repair. So I don't think it's a question of whether someone is capable or not, whether they're blind. It's just whether or not someone has taken the time. The certification training we typically take folks through is basic maintenance and repair the first week. But during the second week, they're actually in a position where they have to completely disassemble and reassemble a Perkins Brailer and troubleshoot it as well. So if someone takes the time, nearly anyone can do it if they have a mechanical aptitude.
Let's talk for a minute about the philosophy that governs the way you operate overseas. On the face of it, at least, to sell a product for $640 in the U.S. and then to sell it for $375 overseas seems like a kind of an arbitrary decision. Could you take us through some of the philosophical thinking at Perkins that led to the decision to set up a kind of a two-tiered Brailer operation, and perhaps even some of the economics? Because I suspect that there were economic issues that allowed you to set this lower overseas price as well.
Certainly most of those decisions were made a number of years ago at this point. A number of factors affected. First, regarding pricing and cost. As I understand it, some 6-8, I think it was as far long ago as 10 years ago, the cost of the Perkins Brailer was rising precipitously in the U.S. and would likely reach a point that by most measures would not be profitable and would not then contribute money back to the school to reinvest it in blindness programs around the world. So at the time, the school made the difficult choice that in order for the Perkins Brailer to survive and to make money, they would need to set up overseas assembly operations, initially in India, and then a number of years later that happened in South Africa. Regarding the actual subsidy itself, Perkins School for the Blind contributes a portion to that subsidy, and we have other folks that help subsidize that discount as well. And that's to provide access, of course, and the neediest of countries around the world that today may have one Perkins Brailer for a few hundred students.
In effect, it isn't just a price differential. There actually is money that is being superimposed and provided to make up the difference in cost between the overseas machine and the machine in the U.S. that's being provided by Perkins International, perhaps, and by other organizations overseas.
Exactly. One partner, for instance, is the Hilton Perkins program. Hilton Perkins Hilton partners with Perkins School for the Blind to establish training and development and schools for the deaf blind around the world. They also help subsidize the distribution of Perkins Brailers in developing countries. Part of the other challenge is recognizing at the end of the day that there are many competitive elements that either enable a Brailer to be successfully assembled, sold, and contribute profit to the school, which of course the school then reinvests in all sorts of programs around the world. The only way to do that is to continue to pursue ways to both cost reduce and expand your market segments. So if there's a market segment, for instance, like the United States, that will pay $640 for a Brailer, and that's been a consistent price in the U.S., and that contributes money to the bottom line. That, of course, makes it easier to expand sales and fund expansion of distribution for other countries around the world that would not otherwise ever have access to it.
The HowPress is kind of an unusual entity, though, and I guess that we probably need to stress this a little, in that all of the profits that they make do get plowed back into the school. They aren't, i.e. HowPress is not a for-profit industry that is simply making money for a particular individual. Instead, well, in fact, let me ask you, is HowPress actually a not-for-profit 501c3 corporation? Or do you guys regard yourself as a for-profit entity whose profits simply go back into the school?
As a practical matter, we are a division of Perkins School for the Blind. HowPress certainly makes no profit. It's whether or not HowPress contributes funding back to Perkins School for the Blind. And so to that end, we don't really make any money at all, but certainly we contribute funding back into the school.
I am now going to open things up to see whether folks have some specific questions that David can perhaps answer, or maybe even some comments. Let me remind people of the format. Ask your question, give David a chance to respond, and then we'll go from there.
Hello, David. My name is Danny. I am in Pennsylvania. The Taj, who makes that? Is that anything to do with HowPress? And I'm just curious about other brailers that are used in other parts of the world.
Hi, Danny. Thank you for your question. The Taj no longer exists as a product or a company. It was made in India. It was a direct reverse engineering replica of the Perkins Brailler, with the exception they used the English measurement system rather than the United States. So at the end of the day, the assembly and the parts and the performance of the Brailler remained unreliable, and no spare parts were ever available. To my knowledge, there are very few working models still around, unless you have one, Danny.
Hello, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. First time I used the Perkins Brailler, my introduction to it was back in junior high school. I think it was probably about 50 years ago, maybe 56, 57. But I really think the Perkins Brailler has been quite a machine. It's quite sturdy, and I think it's fairly easy to use. I enjoyed using it at school, anytime I've used it, I still really enjoy using it.
That's great to hear. Thank you, Gary. I haven't been with Perkins School and HowPress for long, but time after time after time, I hear stories of reliability and durability associated with the Perkins Brailler. And no matter what we do moving forward with new product development, product extensions, simplifying the design, one thing we can't lose sight of is what made the Perkins Brailler great for all of those out there that have used it for decades.
Hi, this is Anya Galini in Maine. I have a question coming in two parts. Number one, in the early 70s and 80s, I used a Perkins Brailler in Germany, and at the time it was already over $800. My question is this: why are there so many differences between various countries overseas regarding the price of the Perkins Brailler? And number two, what are some of the steps being taken to make the Perkins Brailler less noisy and less strenuous for your hands to be used? Some people with carpal tunnel syndrome who cannot afford the more expensive electric Brailler would really appreciate an improvement in that area.
Hi, Anya. Let me answer the price variation question first. HowPress overseas both sells directly, but also sells through resellers and distributors. So depending upon the part of the world someone is in, for instance, if we distribute to the Royal National Institute of the Blind in England and they resell, they may resell directly, they may resell to another distributor. And of course, at every step in the distribution chain, somebody adds a markup. So we would be providing a distributor a price, but that distributor has the right to further mark up the product. Most folks in the world are able and do continue to buy directly from Perkins School for the Blind. But in many cases, we will refer them as well to a distributor if the margin between our price and the distributor's price is reasonable. Regarding your question about the repetitive motion, fatigue, and noise, much of the work we're starting to do now, for the first time, and many folks may not know this, for the first time in the history of HowPress, We have an engineering staff. Historically, that hasn't been the case. So much of the effort that the engineering folks are putting into R&D and new product development is to start replacing parts that wear against one another. For instance, if you've got metal on metal parts, aluminum castings, that starts to create noise and stresses in the system. So in some cases, you'll actually see us putting plastic parts meeting metal parts, and that further reduces the noise. The light touch electric brailer certainly is less stressful. The other thing we do now on most brailers is they are actually tuned for a lighter touch, particularly in the European market. That over the last decade or so has demanded a lighter touch. Hope that answers your question.
Hi, this is Steve Bauer from Wichita, Kansas. I own three Perkins Brailers, and my oldest one I received for Christmas, I think it was in 1963, and still working quite well. Maintenance is my question. How often should these machines be serviced, re-oiled, cleaned, etc.?
Hi, Steve. Gotta love a dedicated customer. 1963, huh? There's actually, for those of you that don't know it, available on the website, there is now, I think it's $30, $29.95, there's actually a basic maintenance and repair DVD that takes folks through all the basic steps and basic cleaning and adjustments, the kind of things that 80% of any Perkins brailers out there are going to need. Most of that is basic tuning, a lot of it's cleaning and oiling. I would say 90% of the problems we see that come in on Perkins brailers, any Perkins brailer that's less than 20 years old, is really just basic cleaning, removing some of the gunk, some really basic tuning and adjustments of screws and springs and those sorts of things.
Hi there. David, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Joe from Boston. I am a longtime user. I got my Perkins brailer in the 60s, too. I hope Peter's still there. I have two of them. The commission gave me one, and I got the other one cleaned. I never picked it up. I see the changes you made. I have a two-part question. Are you going to start making, and I know it sounds crazy, but I'm like Noel Runyon, who was on here, things simple and stupid, an electric Perkins brailer, but with like almost like a note-taker combination. And I hope it's not horribly expensive. I know that when I got it, it was $100. I think they're $600 or $700 because they are heavy. I have it in the case, not the hard case. I was going to get the hard case for the other one. If it's still there, I'll sell it. I don't need two. And that's my first question. And my second part of the question is, did you say that they are made overseas now or kitted overseas? I know they used to build everything there. I missed that. I was on the phone with a long distance call. So I'm another satisfied customer. They work well, but it's kind of hard. I wish they had not noisy and lighter touch. I know you mentioned that, but I think it's a real one that you could actually fit on your lap, a little bigger than the note taker would be perfect. Just thought I would throw that out. I'd like your feedback on that. Thanks a bunch.
Hi, Joe. I have seen some of the, I think this is what you're referring to, some of the old retrofits that allow the Perkins brailer to be a note taker. All I can tell you for now is that we've actually looked at that and we're evaluating that. I don't expect that we'll be jumping on that quickly. There are a number of other things we're trying to work on now. I do see that as a possibility as we get our legs under us with our new engineering team, and we've been expanding production capacity and putting in quality systems. There's an awful lot going on right now, but I've talked to a number of the folks that are in this forum and other folks that have participated in the past about ways to introduce other electronic devices as add-ons to the Perkins brailer. So I expect that will happen, but it will take some time. As to where the brailers are built, today they're built in three locations. I can tell you that best practices and quality systems are in place in all those locations, and when you buy a brailer from the Perkins brailer, you can be assured that it's as good coming from South African facility as the India facility, as the Halpress facility. They all use the same assembly processes. We've implemented new manufacturing and assembly practices. As I mentioned, our partner in India is ISO 9000 certified and a vendor for the automotive industry. So these are world-class partners, and folks should feel very comfortable about the brailers that they get.
This is Phil Vlasak from Michigan. I got my first Perkins 22 years ago, and they work very well. One suggestion I would recommend is if you could, if any way you could have them use either tractor feed or continuous feed paper. That would I would appreciate that. The one aspect is the single sheet does slow down any extensive brailing. The other aspect is my dad used to take mine apart every year or so, and he would find almost a cup full of paper dust in it. So I was wondering, is there any way to either vent the dust out or make it easier to take that out, or recommend, you know, blowing the thing out with air that extended the life of the machine by cleaning it out regularly?
Hi, Phil. Thank you for your suggestion about the tractor feed and continuous feed. Regarding the vent dust, I can't tell you directly from my experience being new to the Perkins Brailer over the last year or so. Certainly everything I hear and see from the folks that do this is that taking off the bottom cover, blowing out the dust, wiping down with a rag areas that may have gunked up, and doing a light oiling pays huge dividends in the operation and performance of the brailer, though. I hope that answers your question.
Hi, David. This is Doug Hall in Daytona Beach, Florida. I have a Perkins Braille Rider right here in front of me right now. I've had almost 47 years. My parents bought it for me when I was a kid, and it still works. I think it's been repaired 4 times in the past 47 years. The other point I want to mention is that Florida's library does have a Brailler repair program, which is run by a person who is blind. Thanks to the Division of Blind Services, which is the state agency, the state purchased the part and then sends them to the library so we can repair any Braille writer in the state of Florida.
Wow, 47-year-old Perkins Brailler. I got to believe that's no longer gray. It's probably some tint of green. That's amazing. Thank you, Doug.
This is Anya in Maine again. I just had a suggestion as far as the cleaning goes, and a quick short story to add to that. One year, I can't remember now, it must have been in the mid-70s, I went on a trip, a camping trip, and somehow there was quite a bit of dust and leaves and things like that coming into the Perkins Brailler. Was the only thing that I had at the time to take some notes with, and I wanted to, you know, not have it erased from my memory. But at the end of the trip, I ended up with a bunch of gunk in the Perkins Brailler, and I took the cover, I didn't send it in, I took the cover off myself, because I like to do a lot of things. And I took a shop vac and simply just vacuumed it out. It worked perfect. All that gunk was gone, even stuff that I didn't expect. It was great. A shop vac with the small attachment at the very end will keep the machine intact and clean it out really well.
Thank you, Anya. That's a terrific suggestion. I'm sure the folks at Howe Press know that, but I'll mention it anyway, because sometimes these are little tricks of the trade that everyone should know.
David, it's Joe with another question, if I may ask another question. Will you give us the new products, like for Dymo labelers, Dymo brailers, which would be much better than that stupid little squeeze thing? And I haven't used this brailer in quite a number of months. It's the new one. It's in its case. Should I use it or just take it off and vacuum? I got it. It's brand new. Keeping it in the case is good for it. But because it hasn't been used, will the oil harden up? Or I don't know. I don't take brailers apart normally. I never used to because I don't like to do that. But what is your suggestion? And would you also tell us about the new products you're coming out with? Because that's why we've given you some suggestions, like for little cards, little 4x6 cards. I don't know whether I guess you have to use a slate and stylus for them, or you can use a writer or a brailer. But you may be coming out with other products you can write. Like, I used to have a very nice notebook. They don't make it anymore. You could put the has 3 holes. I heard they still have a small one that will fit those cards. And how about paper punches? They used to make one for the blind. It was very easy to use. Are they making it anymore? And I'd like your feedback. Thanks.
Well, Joe, that's a mouthful. Some of those I can answer. Some I'm not able to. We certainly have the Dymo tape holder and the Dymo labels and the 3-hole punch notebooks. I can tell you right now, certainly since I've been with the business, we initially focused on sales and marketing. Now we've been expanding capacity, putting in new manufacturing systems, training and cross-training, building the engineering staff. And for many of you that may not be familiar with manufacturing, because of the nature of Howe Press as a craft business, many of the modern systems that we all take for granted, business software systems, quality systems, manufacturing technologies, were not in place. And so part of the process of ramping up production and really transforming this craft operation into a world-class manufacturing operation is the focus of, I would say, our first year to 18 months. In parallel to that somewhat is a renewed focus on improving the Perkins Brailler. making it, recapturing any market we might have lost, although, as I mentioned, sales are up significantly, and really streamlining the design, lightening it, improving the ergonomics, particularly lightening it and the ergonomics of the keys, lightening the load of the keys. So though I suspect we will get to those other products, much of the initial focus is really going to be the flagship product, the Perkins Brailler.
Hello, Dave. This is Brian. I have a couple of quickie questions, if I may. One is, can you give us an idea of what kind of processes happen when you do something even as simple as offering the Braille writer in a variety of colors, as you've recently done? And also, is there any plans to produce any support kind of materials, things such as dust covers and carrying cases and things along those lines that will make the Braille writers that we already own more valuable to us?
The Perkins Brailler, the standard Brailler is available in the standard gray, blue, and green. And certainly anytime you start mixing colors in, there are all sorts of issues and costs associated with the logistics of managing inventory, of guessing on the right color mix. Some of that we manage because we aggressively minimize inventory, and everything now is built based on real demand. So we don't just tend to build lots of Brailers and put them in stock to sit around. We tend to build on real demand, actually real worldwide demand. Regarding accessories and desk covers, Brian asked a perfect question. Actually, I just got done evaluating new desk covers today and new soft side carrying cases. We just received the first batch of new soft side carrying cases. They have the Perkins embroidered logo on the side with the big P, Perkins School for the Blind. It identifies the website. I think over the next year, one area that's relatively easy for us to expand on are products and accessories for the Perkins Brailler. You'll start to see us packaging Brailler kits where somebody at the time of purchase actually gets a paper, a soft side carrying case, dymo tape holder, dymo tape, and probably the basic maintenance and repair DVD.
This is John Hart, Daytona Beach, Florida. If when someone is servicing their own Perkins and they come across a problem that they just can't quite figure out what the problem is, is there someone we call and ask questions?
Absolutely. Great question, John. Certainly, there. Some of you may already know Peter Avery. He runs our administration and service. Peter is, by any measure, a certified Brailler repair specialist. A number of years ago, he used to build Brailers. He now runs the service group both here and overseas for the South African and Indian operation. And anyone can reach Peter by calling the main Howe Press number, Peter Avery, 617-972-7308. He can help you with any of those problems, any of those questions.
Hello, this is Danny from Pennsylvania. I'm interested to know what types of other Brailers are out there that you might have looked at that are being made today, or is this it? Just curious. Because I know years ago the Lavender was made, but they discontinued that.
Hi, Danny. I can tell you we've been reasonably inward-focused in the last 9 months or so, but the only time we've lost a tender to any other manufacturer was a joint Chinese-German venture, Chinese Brailler for Turkey, of all places, and that happened to be a purchase by the government that, to our knowledge, none of the teachers, students and principals wanted, but the price couldn't be beat. But they are not particularly satisfied with the purchase. So, but certainly there are a number. There's a Slovak model. There's a German model. We've been fortunate in that for the most part, we haven't competed head to head with those other products.
Do you see devices like the Jot-a-Dot or the product whose name I've forgotten that was being marketed by Lions Clubs a few years ago as competition with the Perkins, and have they had any impact? I guess their chief advantage is that they're significantly smaller than a Perkins Brailler and some would say quieter.
I can't say that the direct competition, and that's not to minimize the quality of the products of the organizations that manufacture them. I can tell you that it's clear to us when we look at the current Perkins Brailer and emerging trends, that we need to continue to look for ways for the Brailer of the future to be lighter and more portable and have some improved ergonomic features. But I think that's just good product development and good response to the needs of the customer. I do expect for some time, just based on the demand and the feedback I see, that the current Perkins Brailer, essentially the current Perkins Brailer, will continue to be sold for years to come as we look at new opportunities to serve other segments of the market.
One other question with regard to ergonomics. This is Paul again. Blind people tend to shy away from the word ergonomic because it's often somebody else's notion of what ought to be cool for blind folks. And so I guess first my comment and then a question. My comment would be I hope you will consider a lot of beta testing for any ergonomic changes that you're likely to make. There are lots of folks who think that the Perkins Brailer as it currently is pretty ergonomic.
It would be very unlikely that any new product would come out of Perkins and Howe Press without significant beta testing and focus groups. With respect to ergonomics, my experience is in working with users, anything that keeps the wrists, the elbows, the shoulders as close to neutral as possible and reduces and minimizes fatigue is a good thing. But, of course, that's measured by the user. So if you don't engage the user in that kind of design, one never knows for sure if it has any improvement at all.
Dave, it's Joe. Would you recommend that I take the bottom off and vacuum it? I haven't used this much in months. And is it bad just sitting there in its case? And what about for writing for index cards? Are you thinking of getting an index card writer similar to a Brailer? You know how you get your new credit cards and notes you want to carry around? Something that you could write like the Brailer, but in a smaller version.
Hi, Joe. You should be fine taking it right out of the case or leaving it in the case as a case may be. You should be able to remove either the top or the bottom, and probably as Anya suggested, vacuum it right out. Regarding the index card, that would be a significant new product development. I can't see that happening in the short term. That's come up from a number of folks, and I think it's a wonderful suggestion. It's honestly not clear to me what the market opportunity is and the cost for development is for that. It's probably not something we're going to tackle in the short term, though.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just wondered if it's once a year I do this, because I can't take the cover off. I'll do the bottom, or maybe I'll have to send it in because I haven't used it much. That's why I asked that question.
Hello, this is Danny from Pennsylvania. I think that refreshable Braille will not compete with the Brailer until one can get a whole page of refreshable Braille at one time, and the device would be reasonably affordable. Thank you.
This is Phil again. I have a suggestion about slates. I would recommend, if you could, possibly attaching a stylus or having a clip to attach the stylus to a slate, you know, to make one item out of it, or possibly sell a little pouch. I'm thinking of the pocket slate where I have a pair of scissors, a dymo tape, a one-line slate, a pocket slate, index cards, and a stylus all in like a 6-inch square pouch just to keep it all together.
Thanks, Danny. I think that's a good suggestion. I have to tell everyone, it's a privilege and an honor for me, and it's just been an exciting 9 or 10 months at Howe Press. It's very rare that one can look at a product that's 50 years old and say, to many folks around the world, this still is modern technology. If you're in Malawi or Burundi or Southeast Asia, and you're just learning basic Braille literacy, you don't have access to adequate funding, you don't have access to reliable electricity. This is your pencil and paper. This is your technology, and it speaks a lot to the point that sometimes technology is what we use for tools that help us connect with our world and not just something built around a silicon chip.
Other questions?
Yeah, Paul, one last one from Joe. David, why are the Perkins Brailers so expensive, and are you going to still make them in this country? I know you said you're outsourcing them, but it would seem logical to me that some of them would be made in this country. I don't know whether they still are, and I missed the first part. I was doing two or three things at once. Thanks.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, yes, actually, they are still built and assembled in this country. Just to help folks understand a little bit, each and all of the parts today All the components are manufactured here in the U.S. In many cases, those components ship overseas in a container and get assembled there under world-class conditions. These are terrific assembly plants. But we also now still assemble at Howe Press in limited numbers, and that's to keep the magic, to keep the process intact, to identify and improve manufacturing processes and simplify the design, etc.
Thank you very much, David. I just wanted to add, how do you do your quality control with long-distance people? How do you keep in touch and see if they're the same? Because that's why I wish everything was made over here. But like when you get a brailer from India, how do you know whether it's the same as what you do over here?
This is where we use other technology. There are a number of combination of things. One is we now cross-train between facilities and share best practices. So, for instance, we might have the chief inspector from India and South Africa. We audit and sample all brailers coming in from overseas. So we would take those through a checklist, do a sampling, and depending upon the sampling, we would know if we have a problem or not. We also have, and we've implemented a web-based quality system. So with the magic of the internet, of course, we can do quality improvements, productivity improvements, policies and procedures, and share all that via the web. So it is actually a web-based quality management system.
Thank you. I didn't know you checked brailers from other parts of the globe, but I guess that's a good thing. Thank you.
This is Anya in Maine again. You shared with us the cost of the manual Perkins brailer. What is the current cost of the electric brailer? And part two of my question is, suppose I was to purchase one and wanted to use it in another country where, for example, 220 volts are used versus 110, what adaptations are made to the machine so that it can be used in other electricity conditions?
Hi, Anya. In the U.S., the price of an electric brailer, I believe, is $920 U.S. dollars. Overseas, there are a number of developments. In the past, what resellers and distributors have done is sell the 110 version, and folks that are buying the brailer have the responsibility of course, figuring out how to get power to it. What we're in the process of doing now is actually bringing to market a 220 volt that's being now reviewed by UL and will get CE certification, and that'll actually be for the European market, a 220 volt Perkins electric brailer.
This is Phil again. I have a suggestion. Have you investigated different materials for the Perkins frame? I believe it's an aluminum, but like my cane is now a graphite. So graphite would be a possibility, or fiberglass, or nylon, or even titanium.
Until 6 months ago, the short answer would have been no. What we've started to do is to step back and take another fresh look at the Perkins brailer. As many of you know, the design has not changed in nearly 50 years. So part of the challenge is knowing where to start. Does it require a new design? Is there an opportunity to lighten the brailer? Where do you use plastics? Where do you look at titanium? Is magnesium, it's lighter than aluminum, an option? All those kinds of conversations, and actually some folks that are here have been involved in those kinds of discussions about how to improve the Perkins brailer, how to lighten it, how to lessen the cost. And I think you'll see an awful lot of development there over the next 12 months or so.
Joe from Boston here. What is the guarantee on the Perkins brailer? And I have a comment too. And I know you don't want to make them too light or too flimsy. Well, you can make them light, but I like the ruggedness because we could actually drop those things. We could find the same materials, be the same well built, so they wouldn't be crushed or broken, they would hold up. And what is the advantages and disadvantages of an electric brailer, and what is the guarantee? And I think the price of the regular brailer, although the price of metal and stuff and steel has gone up, is that right? It's around $600 or $700. And have you tried to get the price down? Because I know years ago it used to be like $100.
Hi, Joe. The current warranty is 1 year parts and labor on the Perkins brailer. I'm not sure if you were asking about the price. The electric brailer is $920. The advantages and disadvantages, the primary advantage of the electric brailer is the light touch and the response. So when you're pushing down on the keys, the ability to continue, for instance, transcribing would be an advantage for the electric brailer. With respect to the price, $640 price, to my knowledge, in the U.S. for the Perkins Brailer hasn't changed in over 10 years. And I'd say in the world of an industrial product, that's a bit unusual to hold a price steady. I'm not talking electronic products, but this is a mechanical product with 700 odd moving pieces.
David, we'd like to thank you very much for being with us tonight. I'd like to thank everyone who's raised questions and made comments. I think that one of the things that's been demonstrated is that we who are Perkins Brailer users are pretty loyal and are pretty constant in our regard for the machine. What is also exciting is that Howe Press and Perkins is continuing to look at ways of making Perkins Brailers available to a much wider population than might otherwise be able to afford them through its subsidy program. David, thank you very much for being with us. We really appreciate your participation.
Thank you, Paul, and everyone else that joined us. It's been a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Next week on Tuesday Topics, we're going to explore emergency preparedness and how it affects people who are blind. When we're preparing for emergencies, do counties, states, and the country as a whole pay much attention to the needs of people who are blind? What can we do to make a difference in this regard? Are there some specific rules that ought to be adopted that would enable blind people to be safer in times of disasters? What did we learn from Katrina and other hurricanes last fall? For the answers to these and other intriguing questions, as well as for an opportunity to impact the way that emergency preparedness is implemented, tune in next week to Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, the voice of the blind community.